You're listening to Simple Flight Aviation Radio with Al Waterloo and Mark Eppner on www.simpleflight.net.
Simple Flight Radio, ready for takeoff.
What do you think about flying? Is it a sport? A business? Is it easy or difficult? Is it boring or exciting? Alan Waterloo and Mark Eppner think it may be any of those things, but they like to make it simple. This is Simple Flight Radio, where Mark and Al talk about the many aspects of aviation and the amazing people doing amazing things to make this world a better place.
Wow, it's Sunday night again, and I cannot believe it. Listen, how many minutes is that, Mark, that it goes by in a week?
You expect me to remember that?
Yeah, exactly. Well,
I don't even remember my name when you want me to do that. You're nuts. How many? You used to tell me.
I don't know. I forgot. 10,000-something.
Well, it's been a lot of minutes.
It's been a lot
passed.
Of minutes. They passed. I can't believe it. I watched every single one of them sweep by on my watch.
Yeah, you got a lot more time on your hands than me. I didn't look, but I counted.
Are you calling me boring?
I would never do that. Not to your face.
Well, thanks. Yeah, well, welcome back. It's been a happy new year.
And the same to you, my
Thank
friend,
you very much.
And yours. That's I can't believe we're already a full week into the new year.
Yeah, I know. It's absolutely outstanding. But I think we had a great show last week. We talked a lot about New Year's resolutions. But it's the 2013th. It's 8 p.m. in the Central Time Zone. We're in Chicago, Illinois.
Got to be Simple Flight Radio.
How about it?
Yeah.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Al Waterloo with Mr. Mark Eppner tonight, and broadcasting live from the KPWK Airport. And
we have a nice Challenger 300 showing its back end to us. It could have parked a little bit different. Yeah. But it's a beautiful back end.
Yeah. it's the business end of the airplane.
Yeah, oh, there you go. It's been a business doing pleasure with you.
It sure has, hasn't it though? Yeah. You know, but it is
have you ever flown one or been in one of those?
I have not.
It's beautiful.
Have you?
No, actually as many years as I've been around, I've only been in one jet. It was a Lear 45.
Really?
Yeah. Boy, that seems loud. I'm sorry. I hope I'm not blasting out. Keep going, Mark. I got a ride from Palwaukee to Midway, a deadhead. And then the pilot drove me back here, even though he lived down near Midway. It was the nicest thing, but he had heard I'd never been on a Lear. And he said, come on, we're going to deadhead back to Midway.
Oh, nice.
So 3-minute flight down there and a 45-minute drive back here, and then he had to drive all the way back.
That's an incredible treat.
Yeah, no, it was great, and I have to confess, I shouldn't say it in case FAA's listening, I wasn't even belted in. I just kind of kneeling into the cockpit watching these guys.
Yeah.
Very impressed at how well they operated with each other. The communication skills, even on the pre-flight, was just awesome.
Oh, absolutely. I thought that was every time you go out, and I watch a lot of YouTube videos on that, and it's pretty gnarly to watch, you know, business jets and their crews interact and everything like that. That's the one thing I really liked about the airlines. You ended up having standardized operating procedures, but when you go out and you start flying with the same guy for year after year, you know, you develop your own standard operating procedures.
And that must
have been
the case in this particular flight that I took, because they almost didn't have to communicate. They each hit switch after switch, and it was like a choreographed musical. It was great.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I would, now if I could only get behind the controls of one of those, then my year would be made.
You'll be there soon enough.
I will.
Yeah. Why
Do you
not?
Know something that I don't know?
Well, you got a dream.
And that I do. I think I share that with all pilots.
Yeah, definitely. No, it's awesome. So, yeah. Well, anyway, we got a great show lined up this evening.
As always, yep. I'm excited about it.
I'm really excited about it.
Well, I know why you are.
Why?
Actually, because you have a hand in the success we're going to hear about tonight.
Well, yeah. Well, thanks.
Yeah.
Well, no, it's, we got a great guest on the show this evening. Mr. Al Carino is in the studio with us tonight.
Look at him smiling. What a, look at that little girl.
Happy New Year.
Absolutely. We got another great fellow in the studio tonight as well, Mr. Ryan Braun. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you much.
Yeah, excellent. I think so. We got a great show lined up. They've got a lot of neat things to say. But you know, we cannot start this new year. We cannot go any further with the show without a good giggle. And you know that responsibility lies on you, as I was voted worst joke teller in 2012.
But it's always good to be known for something, right? So, and that's what you're known for.
Yeah, you are. Well, thank you.
Yeah. Well, you know, this time of year, we're always thinking about the future, right? We just went through a time of thanks with Thanksgiving, a time of recollection. But during this holiday season, it's not unusual to think about, you know, some positive things and some negative things. And so I actually, before I even get into this, do you believe in heaven and hell?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think most people, it's like that old blood, sweat, and tears, you know. I swear there isn't a heaven, and I pray there isn't a hell, whatever the words are. Well, I happen to understand that there is a hell, and hell is actually divided up differently for different groups of people. So there is a hell for airline pilots.
Are you serious?
I am.
Oh, my goodness.
And so,
is that bankruptcy?
Yeah, right. Well, that's the living hell. But I was told a story of an airline pilot that died at the controls, and for whatever reason, he went to pilot hell.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and the devil took him to the newly arrived area and put him in a room, and there were three doors.
Uh-huh.
Do you remember Let's Make a Deal?
Yeah.
You do, with Monty Hall?
Yeah.
Go one, two, and three. Well, there's three doors there.
Yeah. Oh.
And so the devil explained to him that he's going to pick one of the doors and pick his own hell. But the devil had to run out and take care of some things. So the pilot secretly walked up to the doors and took a peek behind door number one. And he saw a pilot in there going through flight checks that would just go on through eternity.
Oh, right? No.
For the rest of eternity, you got to do flight checks. So he looked behind the second one, and there was a pilot in there that's forever, eternity again, looking and resolving emergencies.
Yeah.
One after that never, ever stops.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so he's like, oh, my goodness. And then he opens up the third door, peeks behind it, and he sees the captain in there being waited on hand and foot by a flight attendant of the opposite sex that was nice to look at.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, serving coffee, doing all the things. And so he thought, oh, that's pretty cool. So he hurriedly goes back to his position, and the devil arrives back in the room and said, sorry, I had to take care of that. But I want you to pick a door, and you can either pick door number one or two. And the captain says, well, no, I want door number three. Oh, he said, I'm sorry, that's not available. That's flight attendant's hell.
That's awesome.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know, you nailed it once again.
A nice way to kick off the year, huh?
I think so, too. It was fantastic. Nice work.
Thank you.
Yeah,
well, hey, you're an easy subject. I leave with a lot of confidence because you're quick to laugh, and I thank you for that. It keeps me going until next week.
You know, but you do tell a great joke. You know, and I gotta admire your joke telling style because you tell them well. I can't. You know, I miss the. I miss the punchlines all the time, and I think it's funnier than what I'm actually.
Maybe there's a business there for me. I'll have to think about that.
Maybe
or not.
Yeah. Well, that'd be good.
So it is January 6th. I'm actually going to, I know it's the 6th because tomorrow I've got a flight. I'm heading Florida bound.
Yeah, so am I.
I know. You get a little bit more fun because you're going in a 4-seat and I'm going in a 300-seat airplane.
Yeah.
But, you know, just thinking about dates and all that. Actually, before I was going to do This Week in Aviation History, we really do need to do a check on weather.
I think so. Well, so there's one place that I really want to check the weather. And the last
What's
time.
That?
The last time I was there, it was a nice sunny day. It was hot, not a cloud in the sky, and it kind of set the tone for the rest of the trip. And I just want to check in real quick. Let me call them and see
where is it.
What it's going. Let's see if the AWOS tells us.
All right.
Present weather information not available.
Okay, never mind.
Fairfield, Decatur, Alabama.
Decatur,
automated
Alabama.
Weather observation 0211 Zulu. Wind 310 at 03. Visibility 10. Sky condition clear. Temperature 02 Celsius. 2.00 Celsius. Altimeter 3031.
Wow. 3031, that's high pressure.
Present weather information not available.
Not available.
Freezing rain information not available.
All right.
Hey, Decatur, Alabama.
Decatur, Alabama. Al's going to have to tell us a little bit about that a little later on in the show. But that place, that was a great trip, and we had it was a great airport and all that. But we're going to hear about that a little bit later.
Yeah, like a tipping point, if you will, for tonight's show.
You got it. That's awesome. So anyway, you were talking about January 6th.
Yeah. What do you know? We always talk about this week in aviation history, more specifically this day. So why don't you kick us off and give us a little known fact that we don't know.
Yeah, okay. Well, back in January 6th of 1971, and I refuse to say the dates the way that you would like me to. I don't know why.
But it's not 2000 thing or well, you just did with
1971.
Well, no, it was 1971.
Yeah.
Just like this is 2013.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm good. You know, before the year is out, you'll be saying 2013.
2013, I hope so. But anyway, back in 1971, the first McDonnell Douglas Aviate Harrier was delivered to the Marine Corps. Have you ever seen those things at air shows?
I'm sure I have.
Yeah, they're pretty amazing. They're quick little devils. They're loud little devils, and they're bad looking little devils.
They're awesome in True Lies, the movie, too.
Yes.
Yeah. That's okay. Yeah, I remember that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I can't remember her name now. She was in the
Jamie Lee Curtis.
There he is.
I knew Al was going to provide value tonight.
Fellow Iowa boy, Mark.
Yes.
Tom Arnold.
Yeah. We that's right. We have a couple Iowa boys here in the room.
We do.
You guys are outnumbered.
It's great. Yeah. It's outstanding.
It's outstanding.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, guess what happened on this date? In 1942. You like it when I say it that way?
I do. I understand it a lot better. Just like when you start saying, you know, acclimate 12,500.
Okay.
1,000, or 10,000, or yeah. What? No, shoot. 12,500. Yeah, there you go.
1,900 Fowdery, Fowler, right? So how Fowdery? 2. I'm going to stick with 1942.
Yeah, please.
I think we just lost half our audience.
Probably.
So in 1942, on this day, Pan Am scheduled the first ever flight around the world.
No kidding.
Yeah, that's pretty cool, huh?
That
I
is
got a
really
lot of head
cool.
shakes.
That is awesome.
And then not so much. Yeah.
And it arrived 10 years later?
Yeah, right. Well, no, I hear that it was an hour late out of the gate.
maintenance delay.
That's right.
Oh, that's
yeah.
Great.
What about, I know your A380 and how much you love seeing that. How crazy was that? That it had all those maintenance issues right away.
You know what? That's
or not the 787.
787. Yeah. I think it's a great. You know what? I think any airplane you're going to have maintenance issues like that.
Yeah, probably
at the end of the, you know, which is kind of an unfortunate, but you know it's here. It's they're doing it, and it's just I think it's great, you know, that it's out there and actually in service. I saw it the other day going. It was maybe the first week it was in service. Driving down 294, which goes right by O'Hare Airport, and it was really cool. You know, they got a lineup and weight clearance, and they're just kind of sitting there, ready to go. And sure enough, you know, I'm looking at the thing. I'm like, that looks different. And it was a 787 in United colors.
Yeah, no, that'd be cool. I haven't seen it other than actually when we went to Oshkosh, we were holding outside of Rip on while it was doing flybys as it arrived at Oshkosh. That was pretty cool.
That is cool.
Yeah,
nice.
Somehow it's connected. Well, what about this week?
This week in aviation. So there's lots of cool things that we did. So on New Year's Eve, that's still this week. Yeah, last week.
Yeah.
New Year's Eve, I got the joy of watching a student pass his IFR check ride.
Yeah, that's pretty exciting. We're going to hear a lot more about that tonight. But I thought it was cool because the goal and the deadline, however you want to position it, was the end of 2012. And so on December 31st, he took his check ride and passed. That was so exciting
yeah.
for all of us.
It was
matter
really.
Of fact, you put something out in SparkReel, didn't you?
I sure did.
Did you put a couple things out there? I love the elf dancing. If you haven't seen it, go to SparkReel.com under the flying subgroup, and you can see the DPE and the student, Al, doing a little elf
dance. They're having a little party.
I want
a little celebration
that.
Party.
Yeah, and the other video was us screaming from the top of the hangar.
Yeah, it was great. So I don't think Al didn't see that the elf video until yesterday.
Oh, really?
I haven't, but I've got to show Andy.
Yeah. I think it's great. My wife, I showed it to her, and she was laughing about it as well.
Yeah.
It only took 20 years to do this, so.
Yeah, well, it's some people never do it, so. Yeah. You know, that's plus one for you.
You got it. So, and then earlier today, I got a chance of flying with Ryan here, and we flew to his hometown of Dubuque, Iowa, and back.
DBQ.
DBQ.
The DBQ.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, it's kind of like barbecue.
Yeah,
but you know it was a if BBQ DBQ.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah, you're rolling.
Actually, you know what's funny is you and I have flown there, and I don't know if it's because you've taken him there, Ryan, but Al always says, you know, I'd love to move to Dubuque. He loves
it's
that.
It's a cool town.
It's
awesome.
It is a great town.
And I got to tell, Ryan gives a good tour along with his parents and everything. It's a great.
I haven't
time.
Spent much time there. I'd like to. Certainly.
Well, next time we go, we're going to Paul's Big Game Tavern.
Ooh, BGT.
Little bars, polar bears, everything.
Big game. All right. Yep. Now I want to go.
Scoops of beer for 75 cents and a great charbroiler from the 30s in the corner.
That adds flavor.
It's awesome.
Yeah, I'm in. I'm in.
Yeah.
I'd love to do that. That sounds great. Is it near the airport or we need a ride?
I need a ride, but
we'll get
can
one.
Figure that out.
We'll figure it out. We know some people.
Yeah, we do know.
Ryan's
people.
Kind of a big deal.
Ryan's a big deal in that town. Well, which is good, which is really good. So I think we'll have. Yeah, it's gonna be a good time.
Yeah. Hey, now, how about my week?
How about it?
So, you were with me on New Year's Day, right? I have to confess, I didn't watch a lot of football because when I get up, I thought, you know what, the airport. I don't have to work today. I'm going to the airport. And I ran into you and another Leading Edge Flying Club member. And so we grabbed the SR-22, and Al says, you know what, I haven't been to Sheboygan, so let's go to Sheboygan.
It's Sheboygan.
Yeah, everything was closed. We got up there, and we filled up, got some great fuel prices up there. And then we said, well, let's just go a little bit north. And, well, wait a minute, this island is only another 18 miles, and this is another next 18 miles. Next thing I know, we're over to the North Pole, it seemed like.
Yeah, it was awesome.
How did I get so far from home? We just kept doing little 18-mile jaunts north and north and north.
We kept going. And we were like the Energizer Bunny.
Yeah, it was exactly like that. And all of a sudden, hey, that's Michigan. Like, wait a minute, we're in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
And then Newfoundland. Absolutely. No, we didn't go that far. But
yeah, I felt like I was at the wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald, or the wreck site.
Which is in what state?
Michigan.
I think Minnesota, isn't Minnesota. It?
It's, I thought it went down near Sault Ste. Marie or Sault Ste. Marie.
Oh, okay, like could be right. You know what? It began with an M. Let's just go with that. State began with an M. And then we're both right.
Yeah, I'm fine with that. I am fine with that.
I thought it was Maine.
Montana,
Mississippi.
Yeah. Oh, have we just extinguished all the M's? I don't know.
Huh. Maryland.
So that was a great trip, and I need to post some of the stuff that I got on my iPhone onto SparkReel because it was just beautiful up there, Washington Island.
Yeah,
the lake on three sides. That was just a great trip up there.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then today you were to Dubuque. I just kind of went to the Northwest, but I did so in a. New for me, Bonanza V-35B.
How was that?
That was pretty cool. I've flown an F-33, which was similar, but it's been a lot of years. And this plane, just, oh my goodness, it was smooth, it was fast, it was, you know, a good educational experience, because this is the first day of a multi-day check ride, or transition course, if you will. So one of our CFIs, Jason Unger, did a great job in putting me through some paces, emergency descents, and steep spirals and things like that.
Outstanding.
Yeah, it was good.
Oh, that sounds like a great time.
Yeah, it's a good week.
It's a pretty week. Airplane, too.
Oh, it's beautiful. It's beautiful. It matches my high school colors. I don't know why I just thought of that, but let's give a cheer for the green and the gold. But anyway,
we
I digress.
Hit the parade. And I said that with a question mark at the end.
I missed it. I was too busy listening to myself.
Oh, well, that's awesome. So anyway, we got a great show as we keep repeating, but I can't stress enough. I'm really excited to start this year off with Al Carino in the house tonight.
Yeah, no, it's a great start to the year. We've got I think what did you say? We're booked through March.
Yeah, we got guests on through all the way through March.
Yeah,
I'm honored to have been fit in. Right in the beginning of the year.
Well, yeah. we got to start. I say that tonight. I'll say we started with the best, but next week I'll say we saved the best till second.
Coming from you.
Yeah.
You're lucky I've known you a long time.
Exactly. Well, it certainly has been great, but it's congratulations live on the radio.
Yeah, congratulations.
Yay.
It's I'm still pinching myself. It was funny when we were departing, I told the controller, I told everyone, hey, be nice to me. I'm on an instrument, flight exam. So Bob, who's the examiner, said, hey, how many people have you told? Even when I got into Chicago approach, I said, be nice. I said, this is an instrument exam. Got into Milwaukee, I said, this is an instrument exam. I'm telling everyone. so that they knew,
Did that work?
They were all nice.
I wondered why the people that emptied the garbage over at the hangar were talking about Alan's check ride. He told them too.
Yeah. I saw it in the paper.
I needed every advantage I could. But you know what? Honestly, I was really prepared. I mean, this was a quest that started about 20 years ago. I got my private license 20 years ago, so I said, yeah, it took me 20 years to get the instrument. But interesting enough, I did do this before. In 2003, I tried to, I took the test and actually flunked. So, when I looked into the mirror, though, I really wasn't as prepared as I should have been. So,
you were a young man.
I was a young man. I took
You're still a young man.
Yeah, right. I took a hiatus, and this time I said, I want to do it right. So whatever time it took, I didn't rush it. Took the challenge. It was interesting, though. I'm going to kind of throw something else in here. I had a reason to go down to Decatur, Alabama. You heard the weather early on. In the show, and one of the reasons I had to go down there is we have a customer who makes the carbon fiber for the 787. So it was kind of a neat trip to do, and I'd done this about a year before, and it took 2 days to do it. I had to fly to Huntsville.
Well, through the airlines.
Take American Airlines, fly. They only had two flights a day. Interesting enough, that it was almost $1,000 just for the airfare. So Al said, well, hey, we need to do a 300-miler. That turned out it was like 1,100 miles to do this. So that's how we ended up getting down to Decatur. And it was the neatest trip I took, because we got there 3 minutes later, got a courtesy car. Less than 10 minutes later, we were at the customer site for a four-hour meeting. And then, we could have come right back to Milwaukee, but Al had another agenda. He wanted to buy me ribs in Memphis, so off we went to Memphis.
That sounds like a great lesson, Al.
Hey, it was, The best part was the whole day was awesome. That was a long day of flying.
It was. It was 11 and a half hours of flying. It was a 21-hour day. Al said that's what the pilots do at American Eagles. Yeah,
yeah, right. I was going to say that seems like there's maybe some law against 11 and a half hour duty day.
Yeah, I think there was. But, the interesting part is I realized at that point that if I was going to use this airplane to do something, even to go visit my family, or use it on business, you really need to have the instrument rating. So that was the motivation for doing this, is that, I want to be able to punch through the clouds and go someplace, or at least get home, if it's obviously not thunderstorms or icing. We started, I think, in May, tried to get a number of lessons in. Al's always running around in his King Air, so we had to fit in his schedule. We had to fit within my business schedule, but it worked out, and it was really great. It was almost surreal on the last day of the year, to take this test, and it went well, and I didn't know whether the yell, scream. As a matter of fact, I wasn't the first one that was told. The tower was the first one was told when I landed. Bob said, "Oh, well, we got a new instrument pilot here."
So I looked around and said, "Who is that?"
Yeah, who?
Yeah, but then you guys didn't hear it because somebody had turned the tower in our club, but I guess you guys didn't hear it at the time because I think it was turned down.
It was, yeah. Actually, it was funny, and I don't know if I could admit this, but we might as well.
Yeah.
We were watching you via FlightAware. And watching his path, and say, okay, which procedure is he doing now? Well, if he did this, he did it really well, and if he did this, he just sucked. Yeah. Right? Thankfully, you did the really well part.
Well, and it was funny because I guess I'd left all my charts in the office, because all I needed were the instrument plates for the procedures I was doing. So, normally I carry all that in my bag in the plane, but I left it there. So I think Mark and Al, they were having a heart attack because they thought I'd left, critical items, on the couch in the club, but didn't need them. But it's done, and, I'm still pinching myself. I mean, I got to thank Al, and I got to thank Mark, because Mark was, when Al wasn't around, Mark would, go up and be my safety pilot. And between the two of these guys, they really nurtured me through this. So thank you guys for helping me.
Our pleasure.
Well,
us part of the family, if you will.
Yeah, I'm really excited for you. That was a great show. I was telling Mark, I'm like, watching the FlightAware pass, I didn't want to start self-diagnosing ourselves, like you do on Google.
Yeah.
I have a cough, and then you say, "Oh, go to the doctor immediately," when you Google something like that. But no, that was outstanding. I was thrilled to death when Bob came up, and we're like, "Did he pass?"
Yeah.
He's like, "He's good." And we're like,
"Woo!" Well, and again, I have my significant other, Andy, here as well. Now, she's not going on, but she was definitely motivating me to finish this. So. Yeah. I don't know if I'm happier, she's happier that it's over, at least this part of it, because we work together, so I'd say, "Okay, I'm leaving again." 2:30, I'm on my way to the airport, and she'd roll her eyes and say, "When is this going to be done?" It was like the agony and the ecstasy, but she's happy now that it's over. So
yeah, now you get to buy an airplane, right?
Not this year. I spent all my money.
Yeah, learning how to fly. No, yeah,
no. But again, it's exciting, and now I want to hopefully use it to go see customers. I really believe that I can improve my business by through the use of a general aviation airplane. I think I was the featured author this
Yay.
Month in and again, this wasn't me. Al is really he's a motivator, and after the trip we did to Decatur, he asked me to do a blog. So I did the blog, he threw it on Simple Flight, threw it everywhere, and got Piper Pilots, was it Piper Flyer, which is the
Piper Flyer,
magazine for Piper owners, to pick up my the blog that was on his site, and they were interested as well, because I was able to use that airplane to further my business.
That airplane being a Piper Archer.
It was a Piper Archer. And so, you know, they were excited about that. And it was interesting because the last part of the article said, by the time you read this, he may have his instrument rating. Well, so if he didn't read it till December 31st.
Yeah. Oh, that was outstanding. No, I thought that was a great article. We had some great pictures and everything like that. You can check it out. I'm going to post the article on Simplify when we're done.
Yeah.
And see that. That was awesome.
Well, it was awesome because, you know, the other thing is I learned, I think, better from what I call pro pilots, the guys who do it for a living. And one of the things I wanted to do in this instrument rating not only was to learn the procedures and ATC, but good judgment. And, you know, one of the things we did when we were flying from Decatur to Memphis, we had to go through thunderstorms. We didn't go in them, but, you know, we had the Archer has the weather, XM weather. So we used that, and you could look out the window. But there's a few photos where planes on autopilot, Al and I are both taking pictures.
Who the heck is flying this thing?
Of the thunderstorms. But that was really, that was very neat as well. And then, you know, to land at Memphis, I mean, that's a class Bravo and a 2,400-pound Archer, which was kind of neat. But, again, the whole experience was a real confidence builder for me. And each time we went out, it got better and better and better. And, you know, I hope to now, as they say, you have your license to learn. So, you know, I hope to continue learning and using it.
Well, and you said it improves your business. And I think, you know, that's something that's so key to general aviation growing in today's current environment. You mentioned that it would be 2 days on the airline. You made it one long day. But isn't there other factors in your particular business that drive the GA aspect of it?
Yeah, you're right. I've forgotten to mention that. I sell toxic gas monitors, so I protect people in the workplace. Now, after September 11th, you know, the airlines have gotten very picky on what I could put into baggage. And again, as a salesman, everything that I carry really isn't dangerous, but the core part of the monitor, it looks like a little battery. It's got liquid in it and, you know, circular wires. It looks exactly like, you know, the dreaded BO bomb. So, they won't let me carry that on airplanes anymore. To do a normal sales trip now, I have to pack my equipment, ship it in advance, you know, UPS, meet it at my hotel, then take the equipment, schlep it around, and then...
That sounds like a nightmare.
It is a nightmare. It is a nightmare. But, you know, we threw everything in the airplane, got there, did our thing, and came back. Now, we would have been back at 8. We could have been back here at 8. It would have been a nice
day.
But
Al got hungry.
He got hungry. But I did plan that trip. We got to Springfield just before 11 o'clock, but it was our fuel stop.
Yeah.
And they closed at 11.
Yeah. They did close at 11.
The guy wasn't happy. You know, he's like, "Oh, we'll stay open for you." And then I think we got lost on the airport for a few minutes.
Thank
and
God
then,
for iPads, you know, yeah, and poor flight. You know, turn here, turn there. But the guy did wait for us, and then coming back, it was like 12:45 when we got back here, and it was a Pilatus taking off. I mean, so this airport's pretty busy in the middle of the night, but. I'll tell you, I was pumped. And then, you know, interesting enough, on the way home, I'd called Andy and said, "Hey, I'm on the ground." She says, "Hey, I'll talk to you all the way home. I don't want you falling asleep in the car."
What a nice wife.
Yeah.
So, I was, honestly, I was at the office at 8 o'clock the next day. I was just pumped.
Did you ever fall asleep?
I think
Andy?
I fell
asleep. Did he ever fall asleep that night? No, did he?
Yeah,
he got some sleep in there.
I was exhausted.
Yeah. Oh, that was a long day. It was a 22-hour day or what?
It was.
I did an Angel flight once that was 8.8 in an Archer, and I was exhausted.
Yeah. Brian,
how many fuel stops was that?
That was, coming back west, because there's four of us, I think we had to make two stops. Matter of fact, I felt so bad. This couple, she was receiving treatment, her husband was with her. Their flight from Maine to Cleveland, they lost their Angel flight. So they drove all night to get to Cleveland to meet me, only then to have a 4-plus-hour flight thing. And they're kind of like wondering, maybe we should have driven the entire way. But it was good. I sat with her husband in the front because he was into aviation. And, you know, ultimately, obviously, Angel Flight does a lot of great things. But it was a long day, and I didn't want to have to stop for human needs. So I wasn't drinking like I should, so I was getting kind of dehydrated, too. Because I wanted to be able to go as far as they could go.
Yeah. So. No, that was great. I thought that hearing some of those Angel Flight stories are pretty neat.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's some great things. Which reminds me, I need to do another one.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Anyway,
right.
Another
Ryan, show. What's been your longest flight?
Oh, I don't know. Not very long. I've done some one hoppers over to maybe Omaha or something in 172s. So that's four or something, depending on the wind and. That's about it. I've never done a real long, good multi-day cross country.
Yeah,
very sad. That's going to change.
Yes, it is.
It should.
It's
going to
change sometime very soon. I hope.
We're on a mission.
Well, Alan, I know you have some needs. Not only go to Decatur, Alabama, but west of here.
Oh yes. We happen to have a son who works with us. He lives in Boulder. He might even be on tonight. So hello, Brandon, if you're on.
Is he allowed to say hi to his family?
Absolutely.
This is aviation.
This is ours. We can do whatever we want.
But you know, again, the other dream. You know, we always have. Pilots always have dreams, and my dream is to fly out there. He works for the company. We have an office out there. We're now, by the way, going to have a fairly large customer in Fort Collins, so it may require me to fly out there.
Can't go wrong in Fort Collins.
No. So, I mean, that's really the emphasis of another reason of doing this. I want to be able to take Andy and myself. We hop in the plane, and you know, an SR-22. I flight plan that. It's 5 hours, one stop. You know, but 5 hours of flying. So, you know, to do it with the airlines, I mean, you know, it's 2.5 hours, take your shoes off. It's just not fun. So,
yeah.
I mean, there is a fun aspect to this. I mean,
absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, and that's one of the reasons. I mean, I had to go to Madison, go visit the university. Yeah, I could have driven there 4 hours, 5 hours to drive. What fun is that? But I took the Archer, flew in. They gave me a free car. I mean, that's the other thing is most people don't realize you don't have to go to Hertz to rent a car. You get the courtesy cars out of the FBOs. And if you go to Memphis, they give you a brand new one.
Right.
Madison, actually, they're pretty new.
Yeah.
I've definitely had some variable quality courtesy cars.
Yeah, definitely. I remember I was in college and we had to fly from Champaign to St. Louis Lambert for an IFR cross country. You'd land and you'd go over to Bandanas and get some barbecue, and you would go and get the courtesy car. It was a brand new Nissan Maxima. It was right when like the push or the keyless entries started to come around, and the push to start features. And, you know, so we're sitting in this car, we're like, holy cow, this thing's awesome. You're looking at the push to start technology and all that. I was like, you know, you definitely see the forerunning of technology in cars and cool things in the crew cars.
Well, and Ryan and I have, again, some commonality with our love of Iowa. And as you've heard week in and week out, how much I love the Iowa City Airport. My favorite courtesy car story is it was, let's just say, cold there one day. And I had one child at the university there, and we were bringing a bunch of stuff. And I had called ahead to say I was coming. They know me over there. And I land, and as I pull up into the ramp, here they had two courtesy vans. They had started both of them to keep them warm for me. And driven on the ramp and drove them right up to the airplane. I only needed one car, but they brought two. So I said, that's service, right?
Yeah.
But they weren't very new.
Well,
we can't go there. They were kind of beaters, but that's all right. They got the job done.
Aww.
And they had great service. They still have great service there in Iowa City.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So going back to this idea of airplanes and business and IFR ratings and things like that. Do you think they're legitimate tools?
Oh, absolutely, without a doubt. You know, again, there's a story. I always remembered this this morning when I first started flying. This is in the '80s. I was flying over at DuPage, and I was pre-flighting my little 152, and next to me was a Mooney. And, you know, DuPage Airport is right near Pheasant Run. And the guy who was in the Mooney had a suit, and I just remembered him taking his bags, putting them in the back, put his briefcase in the back, took his jacket off, got into the Mooney, and off he went. I said, wow. Wow, this was really neat. You know, at the time, I was just working for a company. I wasn't in sales at the time. That had an impact on me. The other one was Mark and I. You who's the guy who owns the Pilatus?
The guy over there in Hangar 10.
Yeah, I don't remember. But anyway, we got a ride. Mark got a ride, and then in the right seat, and then he had to ferry it to Aurora, so he asked me if I wanted to go. So I got my first ride in a business prop jet. Like you, on my knees, I didn't want to put my seatbelt on. But, he's got his own business, and he uses that plane to ferry people and customers to put them in front of, wire. I guess he sold wire, so he would bring the contractors to the wire companies, and he was able to justify $1 million airplane. So I said, wow, there's something to this. So
yeah,
you know, why can't a little guy like me, I can't afford a Pilatus, but why can't I use an airplane to go visit customers? I mean, again, if when we were on our way to Decatur, Al took a shot of where all the rivers come together in Kentucky and Illinois, and I said, man, I got three customers down there. One in Metropolis, one in Paducah, one in Westlake. I said, wow, it didn't take very long to get here, even in an Archer. Right. So, honestly, guys, I mean, I hope that from this point on, you're going to be hearing a lot more success stories about how I'm able to get in front of people with an airplane and have fun doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's okay when, like, the wind's against you. Darn, I'm going to be up here in half an hour longer.
Yay!
Right. Ryan, you had some thoughts earlier today on an airplane getting you in front of people and things like that for a business. I think there's some value to that.
Well, absolutely. So my business is a contract engineering company.
Yeah.
I have several employees within a good GA radius and several customers within that GA radius. And so I use it occasionally to, go see them face to face. I don't necessarily get direct sales out of them. So it's always that thing. How do you justify that investment? And for me, it's being able to get there and back and get back to work on another client's opportunity. It's not necessarily going there, walking away with a contract in hand.
Right.
But that FaceTime is very, very important.
Right.
So, there's value.
Everybody wants that. Everybody wants you to show up and to know that they're special enough to come over. And if I can hop to places, hit a couple, and be back the same day.
Yeah.
That's the only conceivable way I could do that. Otherwise, it's all-night drives or overnights in hotels. So I don't use it as much as I would like to right now, and a big reason for that is the same reason that Al had for not being able to, and that's that he did not have his instrument rating. So I'd like to consider this the official handing of the torch ceremony.
All right. Because, yes.
Because Al Waterloo and I had our first instrument lesson today.
Yeah. So
a week ago.
Congratulations.
One finished and another begins.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You're carrying the flame on. I love it.
Right. And, hey, listen, if I could do it, anyone could.
That's the truth.
So I definitely kidding. Intend to do that. And it's, each business is different in how you can justify it. 99% of us are up there for fun, but there are legitimate uses. There's no doubt about it. To be able to put small GA aircraft to use, and I'm excited talking to companies that I know who ask these same questions. They might not be companies that can afford a jet or a turboprop, but they have sales calls in a large region that they need to get the president to, or the chief of engineering or somebody to be able to get to.
Right.
It's just so trying on these people to go, hop in the car or try to fly and then, do another hour plus. So, there's a huge niche there that can be exploited, but it's just different for every company.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
I
was going to say it's interesting from my perspective. So I don't have a company or whatnot, but I'm a pilot for a company, and it's really interesting to sit back and see how they use it as a tool, right? You know, because it's a they own two King Airs, and we're flying around the country, and you know these things are going nonstop, and that's a lot of money. That's and fuel maintenance and operating costs and salaries and things like that. But I think that these airplanes are absolute legitimate tools of getting them and the common theme is in front of people to do face-to-face business and things like that, which is something I think there's a lot of value to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my dad worked for John Deere, and they had at their factory in Dubuque there, they even had a private airstrip that mm-hmm. they would bring the jets and turboprops into, and they would pick up people at the factory and take them where they needed to go, because not only were they shuttling people between locations, but if you have a prototype tractor out in the field, something breaks on it, you need to get parts out there and engineers out there to look at it. So it wasn't just executives.
Yeah.
You know, they need all kinds of people to get out there. There's no possible way that you can get there commercially.
Yeah exactly. And I'm glad you brought that up. It's just, you know, I look at the people that we fly around, and you know, their time is worth a lot of money. And you know, you think, oh man, they're really running these airplanes all the time, and you just think, okay, the airplane could save these executives, you know, 2 hours at an airport. Well, that ultimately saves, you know, the saving 2 hours at the airport ultimately saves the company a ton of money,
right?
Because these people's time is worth so much money, right, per hour. And now they, you know, if you look at the reach of airlines, you know, let's say to go down to Decatur, Alabama, right? So we would have had to flown into Huntsville, right? Or on the airline. Well, then how long is the drive, you know, to Decatur?
Yeah, you're talking about almost 45 minutes, I guess.
Yeah, another 45 minutes. So now, you know, then you add that time onto it. So this commuting time, you know, we would be going from Huntington, West Virginia to Grand Rapids. How are you going to do that on the airlines?
Yeah.
You know, and think about how much money that would cost a company and an executive's, you know, I guess hourly rate if you were to calculate it out, and multiply that by six people,
yeah.
You know, that the airplane can hold. That is just there's so many inefficiencies if you were to do it any other way other than by airplane.
Well, and you've alluded to it even in my own case at my previous employer. I remember I had a call in, I want to say, Bloomington, Illinois, in the morning.
Yeah.
Then a couple hours later, another call in Springfield, Illinois, and then finish the day in Quincy, Illinois. You know, driving, first of all, that would have been, you know, 15-some hours round trip or something. It was just some ungodly number. I did all three of those trips in one day, right?
Yeah.
At morning, then just a little 20-minute flight, I think, to Springfield, and then an hour over to Quincy. And
It
was relaxing and it was fun. To your point, Al, I remember getting out and putting the jacket on. You know, it's like my tie was on, and I'm ready to rock and roll.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny. You, even us GA pilots, I flew to Indianapolis once, and they put the red carpet out for me, just like they did for the Lear guys. I mean, wow. I felt great.
Yeah, right. And then they saw who you were. They, can we borrow the carpet back? We got a jet coming in.
There's another story in the future, and what I'm doing is tabulating how much it's costing for these flights and what kind of business it's going to come in. So, yeah, I need another year. It's my work in progress right now to maybe a year from now I'll tell you, you know, financially, what did I spend and how much money did it generate for the company? You know, again, the younger generation, and I'm not so young, but the younger generation does everything via the internet now. I mean, my sons, you know, are in sales, and you know, I beg them, why don't you go into the field and visit somebody? He said, Dad, I really don't need to. People communicate now over the internet. Well, you know, I still believe there's a benefit to being belly to belly in front of people, and I know that when I get in front of people, I've always been able to uncover even more opportunities.
Yeah.
You know? So again, that. maybe I'm the old guy who's going to be flying and visiting people and let the younger people
do it. Well, you'll be having more fun doing it.
So. I will. Exactly. I will. So.
One of the things, though, I think that gets in the way, and I can be honest now that I'm no longer with that former employer, is they were worried about liability. You know, right. I didn't have the benefit of running my own company. I worked for somebody else, and they talked about the liability. Matter of fact, when they heard what I was doing, I got a call from general counsel saying, "You're doing what?" And she said, "You'll cease and desist." And I said, "Well, you know, it's I'm not flying customers around. I'm not flying employees. It's just personal transportation." And her comment back to me was, "What if you fly into a school?"
Oh, man.
And I said, "Well, what if I'm driving and I drive into a school and hit people?" And all I got back was, "Are you trying to tell me that an airplane won't do more damage than a car?" And I said, "Hey, you know, 9/11 aside, and I hate to bring it up, but Corey Lytle, right, the New York mm-hmm. Yankee that ran his SR-20 into the building and unfortunately and tragically passed."
Yeah.
But I said, little airplanes against buildings, the buildings win.
Yeah.
Right, on those kinds of things. I didn't want to minimize things, but I just...
Yeah, we all know that's a silly argument.
From really? The other side, you
yeah,
mean?
Yeah.
I mean, you can hurt people in any mode of transportation.
A 2,000-pound airplane clearly is not going to cause much more damage than a 2,000-pound car or a 5,000-pound truck or
exactly.
any of these things. But liability is a you know major concern.
Absolutely, and I respect that they are concerned about that.
Yeah. And it depends. I think within... You know, my business, I try to have some protections against that. But in the end, you're taking probably additional risks. And if you're insuring your own plane, you know, for that use, it's one thing. Everybody gets jumpy.
Yeah. But I was talking to one pilot recently that flies for this kind of business. Actually, the gentleman is a lawyer, and they checked his company's policy, and they said any mode of transportation is covered. So
oh,
it turns
really?
Out they said no, and then they looked into it, and I go, it's like renting a car or anything else. Yeah. So maybe there's hope. I don't know. But I think that is something that does get in the way in spite of the obvious benefits of time saving and customer service and all that it brings us in terms of flexibility.
Yeah. I would definitely agree with Ryan that it is kind of a bogus argument, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, I heard that. I mean, it's general counsel. I was just a little peon in the company, so.
Yeah. Well, that's why we don't have Migsfield anymore, too, so.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's the same bogus argument.
True.
That's going to be when is that, this day in aviation? I think that was March 30th. Was that when Migsfield? I don't know.
Yeah, sometime in March. I remember I read it in English class when I was in high school. That it had ripped up, and I had just gotten my license literally.
He always
like
tries to make me feel
five
old.
Months ago.
You always try to make me feel old, don't you? When I was a little boy, I turned on my color TV set.
I got to tell you a quick story. So this is not aviation, but it struck a chord with that. There was I used to have my real estate license when I was doing that part time while I was working for the airline.
How has this guy had as many jobs, as many hours flying, and all this at his age?
Yeah, I don't know.
You must have skipped
like disgusting.
You must have skipped from third grade on.
I don't know.
He started working.
When I die, I'm coming back as hell.
Well, they had. So we're in this room, and there's all these. I don't. Excuse me. I'm sorry, but older people.
I resemble that remark.
Did they smell funny?
Yeah. Well, no. So I was one of the youngest realtors in the town, and we're sitting there, and everybody's like, "Oh, talk about we're talking about the housing boom and how everything had crashed, and they're saying prices on real estate are back at 1998 prices. And what were you doing in 1998?" And I just said, it was quiet, and I'm like, "I was in seventh grade." And then I got a lot of "Damn you!" You know,
yeah, I was celebrating my past my 20-year college reunion at that point.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry.
Yeah. No. Hey, that's all right. Don't you ever do that again.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
But no, I think that Migsfield. That was a small tragedy, or that was a large tragedy.
Yeah. Well, and again, it's not that important in the big scheme of things, but that was like a bucket list item of mine to fly in the Megs, and now no one will ever be able to do that again. But oh well, not a big deal.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think that it's interesting how, so that we talk about airplanes being business tools, but you know, I think that these airports are also being kind of mismanaged as business tools for municipalities and things like that.
Well, Megs is your perfect example right there.
Yeah.
And they're, you know, this is a beautiful facility here at Chicago Executive, but you don't fly in and get to your meeting downtown Chicago in 10 minutes.
No.
Yeah, right.
You know, this makes it a day adventure for a lot of people coming in.
Yeah.
You know, if they had traffic, Migs, they could get in there, be in the loop within a few minutes, have their meeting, and fly back out. It was, you know, a tremendous tool for people.
And talk about bogus arguments. Our then mayor was saying, well, you know, kind of putting the 9/11 spin, we don't want people flying near our big buildings. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, at least we had FAA personnel there,
right.
Controlling traffic. Let's get them out and let them fly by now by themselves.
You had the helipads that the police were refueling at. Now they have to go
exactly,
you know, to Midway, I think it was at the time. Maybe they're back close enough.
I used to do a number of sightseeing tours, flying the lakefront, and I always enjoyed knowing that Migs was there. You always had to call for a clearance to get in. At least they were watching you. Now there's nobody there.
Right.
Yeah.
It's amazing. You know, it gets a bit Wild Westy out there. You know?
Yeah, sure. That's a good point.
I always like to have people with me. To, you know, everyone keep their eyes peeled on every corner here because it's a busy airspace along the lakefront.
I took somebody up for one of his first flights in an airplane, and we did the lakefront. And he was so nervous when we landed because I was with flight following with ATC, and every 2 minutes they kept calling out traffic, and the poor guy didn't know what the heck was going on.
Right.
When we landed, he said, I don't want to do that again. I mean, it wasn't comfortable for him. So
I think I've mentioned it before on the show, but I remember doing one. I was heading southbound along the skyline and talking to air traffic control, and they said, traffic, 12 o'clock, a block and a half. No lies.
A block and a half.
A block and a half away at 12 o'clock. I thought, I better find this guy.
Well, that's close. That's pretty close. Quick.
Yeah. Obviously, a little bit of a tongue in cheek joke on his part, but taken very seriously by me.
Absolutely.
You know, you got to go flying with Al. He's got the new Eisenhower route.
Yeah,
we've all done it, right? You've done the Eisenhower and came back to Kennedy and landed at
up the Edens.
Yeah,
absolutely. I called that the IFR. I follow roads.
Yeah,
you do it based on road.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's a fun little route.
So, Al, I have to go back to you. We talked about, you know, using this in business, and I find it interesting that you, as you stated, started off with a failure on an IFR check ride. So. Yeah. You gave it a little hiatus and all that. What made you come back? What was the catalyst, if you will, to say, you know what, I'm going to do this?
Honestly, the catalyst was I couldn't really use the airplane outside of in VFR conditions. And, you know, even if it is VFR but a little hazy, I was uncomfortable in flying.
Sure.
So, I felt that I needed to get an instrument rating to put all the demons aside. I mean, you know, you saw Al's video. And, you know, I always used to tell him there's demons out there, you know, jokingly. And now, you know, it's not so. You know, we went flying, Mark and I, a couple of weeks ago. And I remember a number of years ago flying. An instructor took me over the lake, pointed me eastbound, and all you saw was this black abyss.
Right. Oh, at night, you mean?
Yeah. Scared the heck out of me, right? Yeah.
Even a little bit of haze over the lake, you know? Lose that horizon quick.
Yeah.
So we went out a couple of weeks ago, and we're flying, you know, not over the lake, but outside.
Over the lake.
Yeah, it was great. Oh, my God, you could see the stars. So, again, the real emphasis was I knew that I wasn't as good a pilot as I really wanted to be. Mm-hmm. And part of that was because, I was uncomfortable if a cloud, you know, got in the air. So that was really the emphasis, to go back and do it. And I wanted to do it right. So I really wanted to understand what I was doing, not just go through. Again, I'm not trying to demean any of the 10-day wonders that go out and take these courses, but, yeah, really understand what's happening and why these things are happening. And And so that was really the emphasis, to do it again, because I really needed it. And I wanted to get it to be a much better pilot. You know, I said this to some people in our club. I said, you know, I've been flying for 20 years, and again, I don't want Al to get too big of a head here, but...
Too late.
But one of the things I said is, he finally taught me how to fly an airplane. I said, I'm embarrassed to say this. I've been flying for 20 years, and I now feel I know how to fly an airplane. Because he taught me how to, the two fingers the technique, and every instructor talks about fly with two fingers, but... I really didn't understand what that meant until, you know, he demonstrated it. And I think that was also part of how, once you can control the airplane, the rest of it is just following the procedure. But anyway, long story, I just didn't feel comfortable up there. Now I'm feeling pretty good.
So do you have plans to look at an aircraft purchase or club aircraft, or
is this a sore subject? He asked that question with his wife in the room.
No, you know what?
How brave he is.
You know, I actually did. One of our members and I actually did put a bid on a F-33 Bonanza back in September-ish. Since September, though, a lot of things have changed. I spent a lot of money, so I don't have the disposable income right now to buy into an airplane. But fortunately, we do have some aircraft in our club. Mm-hmm. Right, we've got the Dakota; it's a nice plane.
Yeah,
we've got the SR-22, and now we have this VTOL. You know, that I may have access to. So, it's kind of right now. I'm going to put that on hold until. Yeah. I get a few more pennies, yeah, until the appropriate time. But you know, again, I'm still pinching myself that I've done it.
I wonder why he's sitting over there. He's constantly pinching himself. Did you notice?
As a matter of fact,
like,
yesterday I took the plane up by myself, solo, on my first instrument flight plan. Yeah, okay, it was sunny, but you know. I'd never filed before. And even when I went up with Mark, I couldn't be PIC. So I had to list him, you know, the flight plan under his name, or obviously Al as an instructor. But
you were PIC.
It just, I was PIC, but I couldn't file. Right? You couldn't legally file until you get your ticket.
Couldn't put it under your name, right?
Exactly.
Right.
So yesterday was the first day I was able to put it under my name, file, and went flying, and it was... I came back. It was great.
Oh, it was great. You showed up, and it was just like you got your instrument ticket all over again.
Yeah, yeah. But now, it's no more. I'm still studying. I downloaded the Garmin manual because I know that I know how to use it, but there's things I still don't know how to use, so now I'm reading this Garmin manual. And but it's not like I'm studying for an instrument test anymore. Now it's just knowledge to use the equipment better, but
absolutely,
I'm having a ball, guys.
Yeah,
this is great.
We could tell, and you should. That's how training in aviation and doing these things should be. You know,
it takes the right impetus to get you after pursuing an additional rating or getting that training, because it does take a big commitment of time, energy, money.
Yeah,
all of these things. I did my private. I think I started in 2004, got it in 2005.
Yeah.
And I figured, well, the next thing I'm going to do starting tomorrow will be my instrument rating. It just, that was what I, you know, of course I'm going to do that. And I moved away from where I'd done my primary. Never found a place I really, really loved here in Chicago. Was doing some more traveling. And, there's just a big gap there. I wasn't flying. I didn't have a place I loved. So I think in addition to having that need arise, you really need to find the right place that fits you for your training. And I know we all feel the same way here, that our flying club, Leading Edge Flying Club, really provides that great environment of both aircraft and instruction,
yeah,
and just a supportive group of people who you can go fly with. So I know it's been mentioned time and time again on the show, but that training environment is so important to get people out there to get that, so that they can utilize those aircraft for business.
Right.
Well, and actually, even today, my, not checkout, but my first transition ride in the V-35B Bonanza, you know, I even said to the CFI sitting next to me, I feel like I'm doing private pilot stuff that I've forgotten.
Yeah.
You know, as we go through the stall series, some of the, again, emergencies, descents, I had not been in a Bonanza and put it at 135 knots down. I mean, your nose down, pegged at 4,000 foot per minute.
Yeah,
and who knows what I was, but just to see that ground coming up, and I thought, God, this guy's going to think I never learned this stuff, but it was back in the 70s.
Yeah, you and can't I, pull yeah. the chute.
Can't pull the chute, but you can say, oh, shoot. So, no, but I had that feeling today. All the stuff, the slow flight, stuff that we probably should be practicing on a regular basis, even on our own, I confess that I haven't. So it felt good to get into a training environment, even without a rating on the other end of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know what's interesting is that, you know, all this stuff, the lack of proficiency and things like that, it's like, you know, you kind of need reasons to practice that, if that makes any sense. You know,
absolutely,
like,
it does.
You need, you know, you need things like that. And, you know, to wrap this back into the business side of aviation and things like that, you know, to fly an airplane, use it as a business tool, you need to know how to do that. You need to know how to shoot an ILS down to 200.5 because you have a customer waiting for you to pick you up. You need to know how to, you know, be able to cancel or go VFR and under certain conditions, or go IFR, or the list is endless of what you need to know how to do. Mm-hmm. And business kind of gives you a reason, not only, you know, to fly for your business, gives you a reason to stay proficient, but then it also, you know, is it's giving you a reason to fly, you know, to generate business. So it helps, and it's a snowballing effect,
right? But you know, I don't know if I fooled myself, but I practice approaches. When I go to practice, yeah, I practice approaches with safety pilots, you know, with the foggles, whatever. But and even when I fly going to Iowa City, I keep playing the game with myself. Okay, if my engine were to die, where would I put it down? Mm-hmm. That kind of thing. But I don't ever pull the power back because I'm going on my trip.
Right.
And that's the thing that I don't practice. Beyond the mental gymnastics of what I would do and if I lose this or that, and I try to keep myself sharp, you can't unless you actually put yourself in that kind of situation. And that's the thing that I think we can all, well, I wouldn't say all, I could do a better job of.
Right, absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, it's kind of exciting. You know, you go, and as Ryan mentioned, you know, these training environments and things like that, you go out and you shoot approaches and all that, but you know, I think the club environment, to try to motivate people to go out and stick with a rating, it's so easy to give up, you know, otherwise, because there's just, so you get yanked around too much, you know, and there's not the experience level or the melting pot of different minds and, you know, the skill, credentials and all that. That, you know, these flying clubs do provide a lot of value for that sense. It kind of, you know, teaches you how to stay proficient and teaches you how to find reasons to go out and fly.
Yeah, you see, everyone else is out there doing it. I mean, everyone else is out there getting their instrument rating. Why aren't I?
Yeah.
Yeah. What's wrong with you?
Yeah.
Again, you know, a little. We have a very unusual club, a unique club in the fact that, you know, we have a lot of resources. We've got airline pilots, we've got corporate pilots, we've got examiners, and they're all there willing. They all want you to do well, which is kind of neat because, you know, I feel I had, well, not an advantage, well, maybe an advantage, because I could talk to my examiner. You know, as a matter of fact, Al and I were studying, you know, I have more tabs in my in my FAR book.
You were
book.
Probably one of those guys in school that highlighted everything. Your entire textbook.
Exactly.
So I said, wait, the whole book is highlighted. Well, what value is that?
I felt I was doing something, but you know, and I just remember, you know, we were studying and Bob walked in, he said, "You're really doing way too much." Which made me feel good, because when I did get into the test, I mean, the oral was, it just, now I will give a little secret about the oral. You know, I had everything.
Shh, it's a secret.
Okay. I had everything. You know, when you take your private, you've got to do your flight plan. And I used my E6B and I calculated everything, and I had all the charts all filled out. And so Bob looks at that and he says, "Okay, what are you really going to do?" So I took my iPad out. He said, "Well, I'm going to use Fourth Flight." He said, "Well, show me that." So I had to go through and show him how I flight planned on Fourth Flight. But again, you need to know that. You need to know that. And I think, again, I was very thoroughly prepared for everything. But the club, again, you've got a lot of people who you can tap on. Even our flyouts. You know, I love going up with Renee, or you know, going up with the Stan and the twin. Wow, I mean these.
Yeah, but you know, when you say it's unique, I love our club, but there's a lot of great clubs out there, and I think it's more a statement about the community of clubs, and that's what, like Adam Smith, a former guest on the show, is so focused on that as his first initiative or one of his major initiatives in his attempt to, what it is, the SVP of the Center for the Advancement of the Pilot Community. I don't know if I have exactly right, but I got the right words. I don't know if they're in the right order.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that's what flying clubs provide in general, not just Leading Edge, but flying clubs across the country.
Right. Absolutely. What about the business of flying clubs? So, think about this. So, there's, you know, we've to kind of roll with the business theme that we've been talking about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that they're, you know, flying clubs generate interest for people to, you know, go out and fly for business, go fly for fun, you know, all these different reasons. What about kind of the business of flying clubs? These things are, can you fly airplanes for a flying club? Does that make sense?
Can you fly airplanes for a flying club? I don't think I'm catching your drift. I apologize.
Yeah, I don't. I guess I don't.
It might
even
be
know
an age thing again. You just
yeah. Well, it makes perfect sense to me.
No, okay, well,
maybe it's not what you're driving at, but I see two business aspects at least. I mean, most flying clubs are organized in a way that they themselves are not a for-profit entity. I mean, that's
right.
The point.
Yeah,
right.
But they do enable an ecosystem of aviation businesses,
right?
By the fact that we have, you know, contract instructors generally that, you know, work with a flying club.
Right.
So it's providing a place for those people to work at. And, of course, it's bringing more aircraft into the community, which supports the airports and all the other maintenance and workers. And it also provides a source of quality airplanes that people like Al and I can use to fly places.
Yeah.
Because I would not have the ability, at least, to go out and buy an airplane right off the bat and say, all right, I'm going to use this for business, I
right.
hope. You know, that'd be worst idea ever, right? I'm going to, you know, use planes within a flying club until maybe someday, hopefully, I can truly justify, you know, that purchase. But so, you know, flying clubs feed into the business aspect there
right.
by enabling people to use them. And there's nothing against that.
You right.
know, saying that I can't use that for this type of trip.
Yeah.
Right.
So it's very important for me as a pseudo business user, you know, of
yeah,
general
right.
aviation.
Absolutely. So, yeah. Absolutely. No, I think that's a very valid point. It's a tool. You know, a flying club is a tool, you know, just like an airplane. It could be a tool used for business, but flying clubs are definitely tools, you know, on many different levels for, you know, what Ryan just said.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think each day we learn more and more about the value that clubs provide, right? It was just something that we started as we wanted more community, wanted more social. And I think Adam Smith said to us best that, at least someone he was talking to maybe, that people come for the airplanes but stay for the people.
Yeah.
And all the things that were mentioned tonight about
yeah.
support structure and resources
oh,
and
absolutely.
Supportive nature.
And inspiring seeing other people who are able to use the planes, because I know I've talked to a number of other people in the club who would like to use them for business. And, you know, we all bounce ideas off each other, and there's
yeah.
a lot of shared knowledge there in whether it be how you're able to use it or how you organize, you know, a business around that, or how you work, you know, tax issues,
right.
things like that. What can you write off? What advice have you received? And so that pooling mm-hmm. of knowledge, I think, really helps a lot, because standing out there on my own and searching on the internet is not an easy way to get the world's best advice, you know? And,
yeah.
of course, always consult a competent attorney or a tax consultant. But, you know, there is a lot of shared community knowledge out there that we have as business people trying to use aircraft, I think. And it's important.
Oh, very much so. Very much so, yeah. So, let's see. We have... I don't know. We have airplanes are kind of are pretty cool you know, I look at them as pretty cool tools. I had the other in 2012 in November.
Would that be 2012?
Yeah, 2012. I had a my goals or usage of an airplane kind of shift a little bit. There are two flights where I took. Rather than flying people around or having a flying lesson or somebody else choosing the destination, I actually got to choose the destination for a reason, and it was kind of fun. There's a level of excitement when you're able to do that, and I thought it was pretty cool, you know, to be able to. There's this whole element of fly. From my perspective, I'm happy to go up all day and every day, but I never really get to pick the destination per se. You know what I mean?
Your employer is always telling you where you're going to fly to.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it was kind of a neat shift that that it was the first time in my aviation career where that's actually happened.
Well, I mean, let's go back to the old Microsoft ad campaign. Where do you want to go today?
Yeah,
it's a sense of power there that you can choose, and so I understand where you're going with that. I guess, the other thing that's coming to mind as we talk about the value of flying in business, and Al, you're going to let us know in a year's time the inputs and the outputs of, where the value is. But as I wrote in a blog well over a year ago called How Much Is That Doggy in the Window, that the value of flying isn't just in dollars and cents. And I even equate it to the smile it puts on your face. And I know the value of flying for me, which may be just to go visit family, whether it be in Cedar Rapids or in Kansas City or St. Louis. I have relatives throughout the Midwest that I enjoy visiting. That's pretty important to me. And it doesn't put any sales contract in my pocket or anything like that. Yet, I don't know. I just can't imagine, I want to see my son in Kansas City. Let's go hop in the car for 8.5 hours, have lunch, and come back.
Yeah, right.
But I can go down in 2 hours, have lunch, and come back.
Right.
That's tremendous return on investment for me.
Yeah. Well,
definitely.
And again, I know Andy doesn't like punching holes in the sky. We all go up and just punch a hole in the sky. So I have to have a destination, and she's already got her list of all the different places now that we can go to.
Nice, nice, nice. Yeah.
What's the favorite place, the number one spot?
Denver. Or Boulder. We can fly right into Boulder.
Yeah. Yeah.
But she's always wanted to go to Mackinac.
All right.
I've never been up there, and not even driving. It's too far, but I understand that. You sometimes need an instrument rating to get out because you got a little fog layer. So
yeah.
Now we're going to do it. And I understand that if you fly right into the island, they pick you up in a little horse and buggy.
That's the taxi there. It's the only motorized vehicles on the island is airplanes.
So, yeah, not only is there this business agenda for me, but there's a personal agenda. So we're going to start our bucket list of all of the places that we're going to start going on.
Not unlike you, I talked to my wife about boring holes, and she said exactly. Boring to her was an adjective. To me, it was a verb.
Yeah, I can't. Hey, Andy, you want to go up and do some approaches?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
To the jewelry store. Yeah.
Well, you just need to find a sales call up in Mackinac. So.
Yeah.
This one doesn't necessarily have to even be a business expense. I'm willing to spend the money to have some vacation time, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. But, for me, as you're relating, it's really important to be able to get home, and for a lot of people it is just the time. Mm-hmm. I'm not the high-powered executive making multiple millions of dollars that needs to be shuttled around 8 different customer sites, and it's a direct return like that. But for a lot of business people, it really is just, they want to be able to work a full day, be productive, get back, work on something else. And get home and still have that time. So whether that's personal satisfaction you're getting out of it or whether it's an actual quantifiable return, you have to weigh all of those things.
Ryan, give us a bucket list location for you besides Dubuque.
Oh, yeah. Very exciting. Well, actually, my wife and I were talking about Mackinac a couple
sounds
months
like
ago.
A flyout.
So I think we need to get some people together and go up there. I mean, that's a perfect destination. You've been there, haven't you, Mark? Flying in or not?
Actually, once, and that was only for dinner. We dropped off someone that was meeting their family up there. We had dinner and we flew back.
All right. Well, you know the ropes. So now we've looked at that. That looks great. But what I'd really like to do is go down and do a Bahamas trip.
Ooh,
that would be cool.
That would be cool.
And the
what are you doing tomorrow?
They've got great great guides for that. You know, single port of entry now. They stamp you and you're free to go island to island, places that there's no way that you can go. You know, certainly commercially.
Yeah,
that'd be awesome. You know, whether that's to fly commercially to Florida and then pick up a plane that's ready to go from there. Or whether that's to take your own aircraft, I just think it would be the neatest, uniquest adventure. And one other bucket list that I have to mention, I know Al Waterloo and I both got our flip plane ratings down
yes.
at Jack Brown Seaplane Base. Lake Como, the oldest seaplane base in the world, to my understanding,
Whoa.
Is in Lake Como. And you can rent seaplanes there. And they have safety pilots that will fly along with you because no one rents seaplanes, low-time folks like me especially. But they have safety pilots that will go with you, so it's the nice retired gentlemen in the community who, you know, love going off and doing this, and it's included in the, you know, price of the seaplane rental. And when you're just starting out, you can fly around Lake Como. And if you're there for a couple of days, you can start exploring a lot of these other alpine lakes around there that there's, once again, no way to get to other than by float plane. And I think that would be a really cool aviation adventure.
That's
the wife would love it. I would love it. Everyone would love it. You know?
That's
you
not
can't go
love.
Wrong.
Yeah.
So I have a couple in the hopper here.
Good for you.
My first airplane ride ever, I just graduated eighth grade, and we went on a fishing trip to Canada. So my first airplane ride was in a Norseman, a seaplane that they flew us in to the campground and picked us up a week later. That was my, and it was really neat. The guy had his arm out the window, cigarette hanging out. And he just kind of flew this airplane.
No, I always wondered why he Al flies that way now. Hey, he puts his arm out and he puts a cigarette in his mouth.
No, I have asthma, so I can't smoke. But that was my first airplane ride in a seaplane up in Canada. So,
oh my goodness.
That was a nice trip. I went with an uncle a couple uncles and some cousins. We took a de Havilland Beaver into Quetico National
Superior Quetico.
Just north of the Boundary Waters.
Right.
And that was something else. I tell you what, after spending 2 weeks of canoeing and around, you know, under your own power, and then, you know, the seaplane pilot, he drops you off into the park. You're gone for, you know, paddling around for 2 weeks, and he's and right before he takes off, you know, and you don't see him again for 2 weeks, he says, "Be here at 5 o'clock on Friday." So you're there at 5 o'clock on Friday, and there's nothing more delightful than seeing a 450 horsepower radial engine come pick you up after paddling around yourself for 2 weeks.
That sounds great. I'm going to add that to the bucket list.
Absolutely.
I know it's getting a little off topic, but kind of similar story when I was doing some climbing up in Alaska, and we flew in with Talkeetna Air Taxi into the Denali National Park, and They fly a number of aircraft, but when they're taking a crew like this in, it's a turbine otter, so it's a pretty powerful aircraft. You know, it can get in and out of just about anywhere, and it's, you know, we're going in, landing on glaciers and that. So they dropped us off, and kind of same type deal. We have limited communication in an emergency.
Yeah,
we used to carry VHF radios, I guess. Now we have sat phones, you know, because it's really hard to raise people in the mountains there. So. So anyway, they dropped us off. I'll meet you next time. We ended up leaving where we were, and we buried about half of our gear because it was too much to take with us. We went down. We got in some not so hot weather conditions, and we had to call for an extraction early, basically.
Yeah.
And so we did. And he said, "All right, I've never landed that low on the glacier. What I need you to do is stomp me out a half-mile runway." Now, I've taken off in this plane in 100 feet. I mean, this plane is off the ground immediately, right? It's a turbine otter. But he said, "I'm not landing down there unless, you know, you stamp. First, I need a place to land and then turn around and then a half a mile down glacier to be able to take off." So we spent all day, all night with snowshoes, stamping out a, I don't know, a 50-foot wide runway in basically whiteout conditions. It's very hard to stamp out a straight runway in whiteout conditions, by the way. But so we're out there with compasses, just walking back and forth, back and forth. And he came in the next day, landed. They basically don't want to stop because it's so soft, you know, sinking. Threw all our stuff in, took off, and I'll be damned if it wasn't off in 200 feet. And as I watched that 2,300 feet of runway I'd spent all night stomping out past below those skis.
Oh, man. Oh,
it was painful. But great guy. It was awesome. He came and got us. And then he even went, he dropped us off back in Talkeetna so we could go get beers, and he went back and dug out our stuff that we buried up on a different glacier. So
nice.
He made it all worthwhile.
Wow. What a guy.
Yeah, that's service.
Yeah, that is service.
You know, Al, I'm looking here because we were talking about trips that, and I sent you something earlier that we want to take. And this sounded kind of boring, but in one of the magazines, there's two airport openings in January.
Uh-huh.
Grand openings, because you talked about airports going away. Here's two great brand new ones.
Wow.
And I would love to do that as a flyout, to show up on their grand opening.
That would be pretty cool.
We should have like three or four planes. I'm looking for it. One was sounded like awesome, and they had pictures of it and all. And it just shows they're talking about the business it'll bring to that community.
Yeah, that's
right?
Good.
Support the companies there, that because if you want to call on them, they know you're going to have to come in a Piper Archer or a Citation 10 or whatever it is. Make that happen. I can't find it now.
Yeah, I think there were a couple. It's kind of neat to see a couple new airports being built. I know the one of the newest one that I had flown to was Branson, Missouri.
Yeah,
and I can't remember, BKG maybe was the identifier. It was interesting. They had the ICAO identifier was different from like the U.S. FAA airport identifier. I couldn't keep them straight, but it was neat because a couple developers had gone in and made it was a privately owned airport with airline service, a terminal, a control tower, and things like that.
Found it. Cleveland, Tennessee will open Cleveland Regional Jetport in January. The $40 million airport, that's not small change,
wow,
is intended to be a reliever for nearby Chattanooga and will focus on GA traffic.
That's great.
Local officials say a good airport is essential to attract new business. It absolutely enhances your posture as a location ready for economic development.
Yeah, there was an article just at the end of this year. I think it said there was only one new airport open in the United States, or maybe it was one net airport. That's painful to see. You know, I mean, we're losing a lot of critical infrastructure. Every single one of those. One of my favorite websites is that abandoned airfield website.
Yeah.
So cool to go back and see the history of these thousands of airfields that were all over. I mean, a lot of it, you know, World War II training and things that were not going to survive. But just so neat to see where they were and what they became. One of my favorites is one in Iowa. I don't remember exactly where it was. Somewhere not too far from Iowa City, though, that was an old Army Air Corps training site. It's now the high school.
Yeah.
And they put the high school in the middle. It was kind of an X-patterned runway, and basically all paved, a big square.
I remember that, too, now that you mentioned it.
They plopped the high school down there, and the Army basically said, you know, 100-year lease or whatever it is, but you can't tear out all the pavement. And so right now it's just this massive pavement, lots of parking for the students, something we didn't have at our high school.
Yeah, what are these numbers for? Is this a parking spot 18 or 36?
<You don't know. laughs> Right. What are all these X's all over a parking lot?
Actually, our local high school just north of Chicago Executive Airport at the Northbrook VOR, Oscar Bravo Kilo.
Yeah.
That is a Nike missile, or was formerly a Nike missile base, and the government for a buck signed it over, I think, to our community. We built a high school on it and athletic fields. Matter of fact, we tried to call one of the streets Nike Way or something, and evidently Philip Knight, or whoever's the CEO of Nike, has said, you can't do that. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, the Nike missile base existed long before.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure the goddess did, too.
Yeah. So, but it's really neat. I remember before the high school was built, it was abandoned, and we'd walk the dog on the runways, and there were silos there because they were Nike missiles there, and you could look down. The missiles were gone,
yeah.
But the silos were still there, and like you say, the history is pretty cool.
I think Kankakee was a military base at one time as well, because I remember when I was a student the first time, I had to do a cross country there, and I was in a.
Those are the Nikes.
Yeah, right. I was in a 152, and I remember this runway was like 11,000 feet. And so I did about four touch and goes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, well, honestly,
whether you meant to or not.
Yeah. So I landed and I said, "My God, it's still." So I took off again, flew a little bit, and then landed again.
Yeah, right. Oh, that's cool. There's some really neat airports. You know what's really cool is if you go out in the kind of the Great Plains, the Kansas, Nebraska, Oklahoma area. Mm-hmm. You go out there, and there's like abandoned airfield or Air Force base or Army airfield or whatever you want to call them, one after another. It's like each county has one, and it's really interesting to see kind of this infrastructure and how they're. Some of them were left to rot. Some of them, you know, they still exist as public airports.
Right.
But there's like no towns around them. There's nothing, you know, there's nothing of, and I don't know. It's kind of eerily cool.
It's amazing to see what training for wars can do as far as building all those airfields, because today it takes about all the political capital and financial capital you can muster to try to, you know, build an airfield.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
10 years and, you know, property rights and everything. So difficult to put into, you know, a new runway at O'Hare. Look at the battle that's been.
Yeah.
Well, that's why Denver Airport is out 40 miles away from civilization. I think it'll be 100 years before they move up there. But that's there's nothing out there at all.
No.
But I think that was their thinking was, you know, get an airport out so far that, you know, it'll take years before people start to habitate.
Yeah, I guess that's an interesting point. You know, you have like if you look at Midway, you know, airport completely landlocked and you know no room for growth. Which, you know, that airport could probably stand to grow, but there's nowhere to go. And you can imagine the complaints.
Yeah,
you know, and people don't realize the economic. You know, okay, they're bothered by the noise, but they don't understand the economic impact that noise, you know, generates for their town.
When I first started the company many years ago, I couldn't afford to fly out of O'Hare, so I had to fly to. I used to take ATA, which I don't even think is in business anymore. They were flying 757s out of there to San Francisco.
Tight.
Yeah, and landing 757s in Midway.
Oh, absolutely.
But.
Yeah, that was probably the biggest airplane that can get in and out of Midway.
Yeah, and that was before they put the EMAS in. If you remember the Southwest airline flight that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So now they have EMAS so that it doesn't go on to Central Avenue, I guess, is it?
Yeah, Central Avenue.
And as we know, they're looking at putting that EMAS system in here at Chicago Executive as well. I think they talked about that at a meeting recently. It's not inexpensive, but it's certainly pretty amazing material, it sounds like.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, and I think it also adds to the length of the usable runway that when they put it in, we'll be able to get additional corporate traffic here because of that. That's what I understood.
Well, that'd be good. I mean, that's one way of looking how to extract more value out of the airport. You got to invest in it, and hopefully that can attract more corporate traffic in here to, you know, boost the revenue.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Definitely.
Well, it's 9:30. I think, although it feels like we've already moved into Hangar Talk, we should maybe formally move into it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that was we have Al Carino on the show this evening, and he talked about using an airplane for business and everything like that.
And, well, and then the challenges in getting there. Yeah, there was a lot of things. So again, Al, congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank
absolutely.
You.
I feel like I'm just like stumbling over my words all tonight.
Well, maybe you just need a little bit more dual instruction.
Maybe we flew too high coming back.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Well, that's the thing. You know, we do this show week in and week out, and it is a flight of passion, if we can call it that. But when you have been flying during the day and doing what we love, then it's like, oh my God, keep it going, right? But you have to come off that high at some point.
Was it IFR today, by the way?
We filed both ways. It was marginal on the way over, and actually when I picked up the ADIS coming into Dubuque, it was 800 overcast. I was under the hood the whole way.
Yeah.
So until I pulled that off, I didn't realize that in that hour between, or you know, half an hour, whatever it was, between when we picked that up and we landed, it was severe clear. It was beautiful, perfect, you know. So we got a little bit of actual, outside of Chicago, but I think it was pretty clear flying both ways.
Well, wait till we put you in the simulator.
Yeah.
Oh, Al did.
Well, and, you know, I went up today, and because there was going to be a lot of VFR maneuvers in this transition that I'd taken in the Bonanza, you know, I've been waiting for higher clouds, and it was broken at 2,000, overcast 3,000 when we started looking at it. And then I looked out, and there was blue skies, kind of like last week. And I thought, oh, cool. And we started out, and all of a sudden it started filling in. But we found a hole to get up to 40 above the clouds. You know, at 4,500, we had nothing above us. It was just below us at that point.
Yeah.
We did all our maneuvers, and then it was felt like scattered when we came back.
Yeah, right.
You were able to come back VFR the whole way.
There was clear spots as we moved toward the lake. It became more scattered rather than broken, and so we came through.
Now we don't have to worry about that, because if it starts to
Mr. Instrument Pilot. I love it.
Bring it on. Bring it on. I want some clouds.
I'm loving it, guys. Yeah.
Actually, you know, I always sign my, I used to sign my emails either Tailwinds or Blue Skies. And every time I put down Blue Skies, I know there's some people that prefer.
They get offended.
Yeah,
I'm one of those guys.
Yeah, because it's just great flying in the environment and all. And between the two, they just say, give me a Tailwind, right, instead of Blue Skies. So I try to do more Tailwinds than Blue Skies these days.
Yeah. Tailwinds are nice. Let me put another.
What's the strongest tailwind you've ever had?
Oh my, I don't know. I could tell you the strongest headwind that I ever had.
Funny how we remember that.
Yeah, that's the most pain. I think that created more pain. I think that I'd seen 170 something knots or something like that.
Oh my goodness,
that was a long. It was from
Milwaukee
to LA.
I hope it was in the King.
No, it was in the Embraer. It was in the Embraer 190 going from Milwaukee to L.A. And I remember the flight took something ridiculous, like 5 hours or something like that, to get out there. It was just,
and
it
that's
was
why they pad
brutal.
The schedules.
Yeah, exactly. And I just remember getting on the PA announcement as we're descending into L.A. and you'd. The technical term was kissing the passengers goodbye. You know, as you got on the PA to thank him for flying with you that day. And I just remember apologizing profusely for the winds. And I'm like, I've got really no control over the winds. But, you know, this was definitely I just went on to explain that this was the longest flight and the strongest winds that I've ever seen in my career.
178. Actually, I saw that when I came back from a European trip, and you only have the GPS on the wall in front of coach, and I saw winds like that, you know, between 100 and 200.
Right,
it was amazing.
It is. What about your best?
Well, on the tailwind, I've had 50 to 60 knots on the tail, which in an SR-22 gets you well into the 200s on a ground speed.
Yeah,
but the most fun I had was up in a Piper Arrow, and there was it was between 50 to 60 to 70. It was all over the place, the winds. So I was with someone else, and we were up there just playing, and we said, let's see if we can get and hover. So we turned into the wind, and we didn't want to be unsafe, but, you know, we dropped flaps and everything. We eventually got down to 14 knots ground speed.
That's awesome.
And then we did a 180, and then we were up, you know, like 180 knots or whatever it was.
Yeah.
I mean, it was significant, but it was so much fun to turn in the wind and see the cars going past you below.
Yeah.
And our goal was to get to zero ground speed.
Right.
But it wasn't quite safe enough to do that.
Well, I just got a text message from a listener, and he said that he had a 54 knot headwind, 52 knot headwind, and that was pretty painful for him.
What
and
was the end?
He was in a Cirrus.
Oh, okay.
And he said it'll be a lot less painful once he gets a Malibu.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, well, that's exactly right.
Yeah.
I've seen the emails.
Absolutely. So he had a so it's interesting, you know, seeing all these the headwinds and whatnot. And we actually, Ryan and I had a pretty good discussion on, you know, looking at winds today right before we took off to go to Dubuque. And how low pressure systems and, you know, looking at the prog charts and things like that, how you could tell, you know, whether or not you're going to have some pretty nasty winds as well as, hey, where the jet stream is. Not that that affects us down low at GA, but,
Indirectly it does, right?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. So I thought that was kind of, that was pretty cool.
Yeah, that was enlightening for me. Just, you know, learning somewhere the, wind direction especially is, you know, being affected by that. So, as the fronts go through.
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of fun looking at that. And I thought that, you know, it's pretty neat looking at that. And I always, you know, is trying to teach that or explain it, I always seem to learn something, you know, and, you know, it just solidifies, you know, looking at the prog charts and everything like that. Hey, this is what the actual real picture is, you know, going on.
Mm-hmm. So we continue to get some tweets and all that, and someone want to know what was a call-in number. I'm going to give you a call-in number if you'd like to dial in. It'd be 312-317-6769. It'd be live on the radio with us, 312-317-6769.
Absolutely. It'd be fun to have you. So anyway, we had a what about what do you know what your best ground speed was has ever been?
Well, like I said, mine was in that 250 to 260 range.
250, wow. 260.
I have no clue. I haven't been in much very fast, but I've had some similar tailwinds, like you said, around probably 60 knots.
Man, I've had the Archers almost 180.
Yeah, you know what? 260 sounds too. 250 is
amazing.
My highest.
Yeah, it is.
That is.
It was interesting because at the time I was taking my kids up for a flight. And, you know, I couldn't believe when I was looking at the ground speed, it was like 178. I said, wow. This is
not bad for 180 horses, right?
Yeah, right. Thank God I wasn't going the other way.
I want to clarify, it wasn't 260, because I did the math real quick in my head. It probably was 240 to 250 with the Cirrus.
Yeah.
I wasn't at 200.
We were in the Dakota. Didn't we have some good ground speed?
Yeah, we had about 100 and I think I got pictures of them, 185 knots or something like that. That was good for a Piper Dakota. It's not bad at all.
Makes you not want to turn around and go the other way, though.
Yeah, right.
Well, or just you go around the world to get to where you're going.
That was our lesson in getting around a thunderstorm.
Yeah.
That was neat.
That was good. That was good. You know, I had some friends that that are airline pilots, and I follow them on Facebook and such. And there's a 600 club, and you know, now that there's like these strong winds and whatnot going on, and now that it's winter, and once the jet stream kind of dips down in the Midwest and you know in the lower 48 here, there's something called the 600 club, and as if you could break a 600 knot ground speed. Everybody seems to take a picture of the PFD and post it on Facebook and say, "Hey, I made it to the 600."
Didn't we have that with one of our club members in the citation?
Probably.
Yeah, Captain Zielinski. Didn't he have?
Yeah, he did. He sent that that picture out, and you know, I think it was a perfectly you know, zero knot crosswind and a 150 knot tailwind.
Yeah, nice.
It's like right up the pipe. It was awesome.
Yeah, that's tough to do in a balloon, though.
Yeah, exactly.
That would
right.
be that'd be a little tough.
So, what do you got going this week in terms of additional aviation?
Tomorrow is going to be a fun day.
Yeah, talk to us.
Tomorrow
about that.
We're going to be flying down to Florida with the owner of the Piper Dakota here at the LEFC Flying Club, and that's going to be a That's gonna be pretty cool, pretty fun trip.
Any plans on the other end, or just let's make a fun trip and we'll see what happens when we get to Florida?
Well, I hope we can turn it into Piper Dakota Airlines and and fly you back.
Yeah, this is the quandary I have. I'm going down for a business meeting to Florida as well, and I'm on the airlines as my company likes me to travel.
Yeah.
And it just so happens you're coming back on Thursday, and I'm coming back on Thursday, and they've offered, I'm looking now to Ryan and Al, they've offered to pick me up.
Sweet.
While my company expects me to get on an airline or to come back to Chicago and get back to work.
And I'm,
I've missed airline flights before, so. You just missed it, sorry.
Well, how did I get home? Yeah, so we'll see. I mean, I that's kind of a trip I would just love. And the Dakota is actually a very comfortable airplane, especially with those new seats he's got in there.
Yeah, well, we're here to pick you up. Yeah.
Have you been down to Sun and Fun in Florida?
I haven't. I'd
love to go down. That seems like a nice length trip from here.
Yeah.
You know, completely doable. And it'd be great to go down there for a day, 2 days, 3 days. Turn it into more, you know.
But. And the people I know that work for the vendors, right, that are exhibiting down there, many tell me it's for them, it's a better show than Oshkosh in terms of everything, from the getting there and the time there, and the customers are more interested.
That's interesting. I've never heard that.
Yeah. You could talk to a few people that you and I both know that work for a manufacturer, too.
Right.
I think it has more of a GA focus maybe in a lot of ways, or, you know, I think the vendors do appreciate it.
Yeah, more pilot-focused than sightseer-focused or something.
Yeah, right.
But I don't know. Are you going to Oshkosh this year? We're a little early.
I would love
to.
I would. I think that's another club flyout.
Yeah, we need to do that. Well, we always have a presence there.
Yeah,
and
we do.
You know, camp by the airplanes and meet up with some great people. Have a little party. Actually, Chicago Executive Airport hosts a little party down there each year that we're invited to.
Do they really?
Yeah.
Wow.
They host a party, and actually Signature Flight Sport, and we haven't given our props to Signature Flight Sport again, who provide us our glass and case studio here with a beautiful view of Chicago Executive Airport. So thank you to Signature Flight Support.
Yeah. Thank you. They do it. I was sitting there thinking about them again today, and they do an outstanding job. You know, I think Ryan and I had talked about this, or maybe even we talked about this all before the show. You know, Signature does a really great job, not just at Palwaukee here, but at all their different locations. And, you know, they seem to know a lot about you when you do business at all their other locations and things like that. And they, in my opinion, they really stand out against others, you know, when they provide. It's actually quite comforting, you know, when we're on the road with the King Air, we always try to go to a Signature because, well, one, we're a tenant here, at Palwaukee, but the support and the level of service they provide is quite comforting because when you get to the airport and you're tired, you know, they take care of the rest.
Yeah, no, they obviously, have a fee for all that, but like we always talked, even with aviation, there's a good return on investment.
Oh, very much so. It's very much appreciated.
So you mentioned going to a lot of Signatures in the King Air. Is that, I don't want to put you on the spot, but I'm wondering where that fits in terms of you flew for the airlines, you're flying the RJs, and now you're flying a King Air, which some people might consider, oh, it'd be much more fun to fly an actual jet. But you love flying the King Air, don't you?
Oh, yeah. You would, too. Everybody would.
It's a great airplane. I know it. Well, certainly I would. Let's see. Do I want to go
offer.
Up in the LSA or do I want to go up in a King Air?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, no, I think the King Air is fun. It provides... I don't know. I think that I can see... I have a lot of fun looking at the value that it provides and what it actually does for the company. Mm-hmm. And I'm just absolutely fascinated by that. You know, it's a legitimate tool. Actually, I had an interesting conversation with one of the executives that we fly around, and he said that, you know, going through a cost-cutting measure, you know, the airplanes were never even considered. You know, they're just too that valuable to the company.
Sure.
It enables them to do stuff. So I'm really fascinated by that level of things, you know, how a King Air can provide, you know, can be that important to somebody. But
so what is your fuel burn an hour? What would you say fuel costs an hour outside of all the other wonderful charges and fees that, of keeping something like that
cost?
What's
say,
just the fuel cost?
Let's just say it's thirsty and it obeys its thirst. Yeah.
Well, no, what is the hourly rate?
Yeah,
do you have
sense of it? It burns about 120 gallons an hour. Of Jet A, and it, you know, if buying it here at Chicago Executive, yeah, it's not cheap. And I think fuel alone could run about $900 an hour.
That's not as bad as I thought it might be, actually.
Well, actually, we could fly up to Burlington, it's just you and me, and go fill up a little bit less, self-serve.
Absolutely. That'd be fun.
What wasn't Bob talking about the 777 burn?
Oh, I wish I don't.
2 gallons a second on takeoff?
Well, actually. On taxi or something, right? Yeah,
I know he was mentioning.
Oh, yeah, that's right. It was 30. It was like 30,000 pounds an hour or something like that on takeoff. Yeah. Which, when you do the math, it becomes, you know, gallons a second. You know.
Yeah. No, I should come out. Matter of fact, maybe we can post that on simpleflight.net as that little story about what his 777 burns to taxi for the takeoff roll. How much?
It was an interesting article. It was. Amazing the numbers.
Yeah.
You know, he says it's pouring in, you know, in a 6-inch, you know, pipe, I think.
Yeah, it was interesting. You sit there and you think, okay, while you pump your gas in your car, that's if you were to have that thing on full blast, that's still not enough pressure or flow to keep.
Oh, of course not.
Keep an engine, you know, on the 777 going.
Yeah, as you wouldn't expect, but still, it's the numbers they were, and I will try and find that email. It was over a year ago.
Yeah.
But it was a great, great story.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what are you guys doing this week in aviation, Al and Ryan?
I have nothing planned yet.
Uh-oh, that's not allowed.
Well, I know, but tomorrow we get back into reality. I have to go to work, so... Yeah.
Now we got to pay for it, right?
Now we have to pay for it, but I don't know. I mean, I'd like to go someplace, so.
Yeah, I don't have any plans. Maybe this weekend do something, but next weekend.
Next weekend, I know the club's got kind of a neat fly out. They're going to go watch some Big Ten basketball up in Madison, Wisconsin.
You got it.
So I've been pondering that.
Yeah.
And, of course, we have a Christmas party coming up, which is Friday night. I consider an aviation event.
Yeah. Well, Friday night, we're going to get together with the Flying Club. We'll call it a holiday party, even though it's now a week later or 11 days after the holidays and the New Year. But we didn't want to conflict with all the corporate events that happened during the month of December.
Right. I was thinking about that. I like holiday parties after the holiday.
It kind of keeps it going, doesn't it?
Yeah, in a way it does. And it's just a lot less... You know, you can finally say yes. You know, the holidays, it seems like you're always RSVPing no to all these parties because there's too many of them going on.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So must be nice.
Yeah. I don't get any invites.
Well, some of us are popular and others aren't. I'm still waiting for my first invitation.
Yeah.
Yeah. And maybe get it from my wife. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I think there's a lot of cool things going on. I know the King Air is going out tomorrow.
I can't remember the last time you took a King Air trip. I don't even think you worked there anymore.
He's not going.
No.
No,
he's going to Florida.
When's the last time? Do you even work with the company anymore?
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting because we're flying pretty heavily up until the holidays, and then it's kind of, you know, if we're flying a lot, that means that the people that were flying around are working even harder. So I think that they kind of just, they checked out
for
the holidays, which is kind of nice. So it's the new business year, and bam, fire them up.
So let's talk a little bit about our upcoming shows. I understand we've got some great guests, like you told me earlier. We're booked through March.
Yeah, we do.
Requests keep coming in.
Yeah. So next week we're going to have Jake Eating from San Francisco coming on. He developed a little software patch that you can install and plug into Flight Simulator, and it will actually transmit fake GPS coordinates to your iPad so it will work on ForeFlight.
That is so cool. I actually saw you using it with Pilot Edge as the ATC live controllers with our simulator in our little clubhouse.
Exactly.
And what's the name of that software?
FSX Live, okay. I believe. It's a
don't hold them to that.
No, it's a it's
yeah. We've used it. It's very, very cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so you look at your iPad and it's like you're really flying.
Yeah, right. Well, the most amazing thing for me, and not to get ahead to the next show, is having the safe taxi diagrams as you taxi around the virtual airport to see if it. This is really cool.
Does it tell you when you're going to encroach on an runway?
Does.
Oh
it
my
does,
god!
You know?
Yeah, that's so like the real thing.
Yeah, I mean, because it's kind of hard sometimes taxiing around in Flight Simulator. Where am I? You know, it's harder to see that you can't really look around.
Yeah.
So it's perfect.
Oh, it is. It's great.
Yeah, that'll be a great show.
Yeah, you could go into O'Hare with confidence now.
Yeah, right. Yeah. They should do that with some of the actual airline captains. Oh,
yeah.
But I digress.
Absolutely. Yeah. We got Mr. Rob Mark coming on the show.
Of Jetwine.com.
Of Jetwine.com and the Airplane Geeks podcast.
Yep.
One of the original podcasts out there, which will be a lot of fun.
And he writes for AOPA as well. I know that.
Exactly.
Matter of fact, I just got an email from him.
Wow.
He says, I wrote a story about PWK.
All right.
AOPA pilot ran a piece this month about some of his corporate aviation adventures a decade ago. So, yeah, Rob's an interesting guy because I don't know if you know this. Not only is he an author, not only is he a former airline pilot, not only is he CFI, he's a former controller right here at Chicago Executive.
Was he really?
Yeah.
Wow.
He's done a lot of aviation stuff.
I didn't know that.
See, you haven't had
every job.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
Bummer.
I don't know if he delivered baggage like you did when you got your start, but he's done a lot of things. So.
I would much rather have been a controller as a college job than deliver airline luggage. We'll put it that way.
Yeah, exactly.
That would have been cool.
And then so some of our other guests.
We've got Miss Amelia Earhart coming on.
That is pretty exciting.
Yeah, that's going to be really cool to hear her story. She's out in Denver and
a distant relative of the Amelia Earhart.
You got it. And she's going to be planning a flight around the world.
Is it around the world or just transatlantic?
I think it's around the world.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
She's
in an SR-22.
Yeah. And she's trying to go, she's kind of taking these, you know, different flights around the domestically that are pretty historic flights with Amelia Earhart back in, I think it was the 40s. You know, she took Denver to, I want to say Miami. That was a pretty historic flight and, you know, transcontinental
flight.
So
she's repeating
like
her relatives' things. That's really exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. We got the CEO of Surf Airlines coming on in February. That's going to be pretty neat. So this gentleman is kind of uprooting the current airline business model and trying something new, and it's going to be really neat to hear about Surf Air and what they're doing out in California.
Yeah, I've read a lot about that. It's exciting. Again,
right.
There's, as we like to say on the show, amazing people doing amazing things in aviation.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, that's kind of a little glimpse of what's coming up. But yeah, we've got a lot more exciting guests coming out throughout the next couple months, and it's nice. I can't believe we got almost 3 months of people booked.
Well, and we keep hearing more, and I encourage any of our listeners, you know someone or yourself, if you yourself, that sounds kind of funny, are making some interesting things happen in aviation, let us know. You know, we're always interested to talk with people, and as our audience is interested to hear your story.
Yeah, definitely. Please reach out. We love it.
That's it. That's it.
Exactly. Well, this was a great show again tonight, don't you think?
I think you did a great job. Only made so by you and our guests.
Nope. You were. I kept on I felt like my shoelaces were untied against with my words, and I just kept stumbling over them. But that's all right.
Yeah, like I say, we're all forgiven one. You got your words out.
and thank you for inviting me.
Absolutely.
It was exciting for me.
Well, yeah, again, Al, we share in your success. We felt, I don't know if I would say I felt your wife's pain and in terms of getting through this. It just seemed to go on.
Yeah,
I'm going to get it.
Really hard.
You worked really hard, and you kept, I'm going to get it in 2012. I'm going to get it in 2012, and the calendar pages were flipping off, and I said, please, God, get it in 2012.
We did.
And we did it. We did it. It took to December. You know what? I have to say this before we let go of that topic. I got up, and it was marginal VFR. And yeah, you could do a ride in IFR, but TPEs don't generally like to do that.
Right.
So all of a sudden I wrote Al a text. I said, what's Al going to do? Oh, he's in the oral now. I go, you got to be kidding.
Yeah.
And I talked to Bob. Yeah, his wife was saying, that's what I was saying. So I talked to Bob, and Bob said, we could do it IFR. It's just we generally don't want to.
Yeah, right.
So that was you were going to get it in. I don't care if there was heavy ice. You were going.
Ice, but Bob did tell. I never looked out because I was under the hood. But Bob said that we were at one time above a cloud layer. But, you know, I didn't care. I mean, it was clear inside. So.
Yeah. A beautiful day on the instruments.
It is. You know, I hate to say this. I'm more comfortable now looking inside than outside. And that's not good. You got to also look outside.
So. Yeah. Well, you know what was so funny is, he went flying, and I thought, well, geez, I was supposed to start my Bonanza transition training. So it was like 10:30 in the morning. I said, you know what? It's going to be VFR enough for me to do that. So I called my instructor that was going to lead me in the transition. 10:30 in the morning, I said, hey, we could still go. And he said, sorry, I've already started drinking mimosas.
Well, I mean, it was early New Year's Eve.
Yeah. New Year's Eve day. So that didn't happen, but... Oh, well.
Yeah.
And Ryan, thank you for joining us this evening.
Thanks for
having me on.
You bet.
Maybe not to invite myself back, but maybe someday we can talk tech.
Yes.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
All of you are always invited, as we invite everyone. Even like Andy, you didn't get a microphone because of your own choice today. No, not me. But we've had a couple guests stop by tonight, and that's always fun for us, too. And so anytime whether you live here or passing through at Chicago Executive, please stop by the Signature main conference room under the tower, and we'll be there Sunday nights, 8 o'clock p.m. live Central Time.
I can't wait till next week.
Yeah, let's get through this week.
Right.
I got to go home and write a presentation that I got to give in less than 48 hours.
Right.
Right.
Well, anyway, great show again. Thank you very much. Thanks to everybody.
Yep.
And Happy New Year, everyone.
I agree. And blue skies.
And may the tailwinds get even stronger.
There you go. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
You're listening to Simple Flight Aviation Radio with Al Waterloo and Mark Eppner on www.simpleflight.net.
Simple Flight Radio, ready for takeoff.
What do you think about flying? Is it a sport? A business? Is it easy or difficult? Is it boring or exciting? Alan Waterloo and Mark Eppner think it may be any of those things, but they like to make it simple. This is Simple Flight Radio, where Mark and Al talk about the many aspects of aviation and the amazing people doing amazing things to make this world a better place.